If you are on hold, stay there. We're taking your calls on the Falcons all night long. What should they do at this quarterback position? It's been a very interesting discussion so far. Today we find out Michael Penix Jr. done for the year. He's got a lengthy rehab ahead. With five season-ending injuries, do we just turn the keys back over? We'll continue to talk about it. Before we get to our guest, Ian Valentino, just want to remind you that this Friday, to join the morning shift at Publix on Memorial Drive right here in Atlanta for a special broadcast. Come on in and pick up your supplies for your weekend football parties and come say hi to Allie, Mike, and Bo as they broadcast live from the store. It's all brought to you by Publix. Feed your fandom. Feel the hype this year with Publix. That's the morning shift Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. at Publix on Memorial Drive in Atlanta on 92.9 The Game. Haven't had a chance to talk about UGA yet tonight, so let's change that on the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our buddy Ian Valentino, A to Z Sports. Ian, Georgia over the last couple of weeks here. Listen, Ohio State's reigning champ, and they're undefeated, so it's hard not to continue to give them their flowers. But with the way Georgia's playing right now, I think it's just about as well as anyone in the country. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've kind of redefined themselves just a little bit, right? Like coming into, I'd say, the middle part of the season, they were a good team. That much is obvious. But were they a great team? Were they a team that could come out and, like you said, compete with Ohio State and maybe even maybe like Texas A&M? I mean, I don't know how much you want to always buy into Texas A&M just considering their program history. But I don't know. It felt like there was a little bit of a gap there. And all of a sudden they come out, they dominate in the games that they need to against Texas. They definitely separate themselves in that game. Definitely look more physical, look more explosive. And maybe now we need to take them. I don't want to say we weren't taking them seriously at number four or five in the polls, but now it feels like maybe this is a big four. Maybe this is a little bit more competitive than what we thought. So I liked what I saw a lot. I thought that they not only took care, obviously, on the scoreboard against Texas, but they really manhandled them in a way that I don't think most people expected. So absolutely arrow pointed up at the right time of the year for Georgia.
Talking about the other team in town before we get to some of the national stories, Georgia Tech has sort of settled in into that like 16-17 spot, but do you still see a path for them to rank higher? And also, what are their prospects for the ACC title?
Yeah, they still have a shot. They're still in the mix. Disappointing that, you know, maybe a couple of these games didn't go how they wanted to, especially after that hot start. But a lot of these teams are in that mix where it's just any given Saturday, and sometimes it's not your day. But they've got to focus in. They've got to hone in and get back to unleashing Haynes King. Allow him to be the engine of the offense, and give him some timely playmaking. Get him a couple turnovers in some of these key games. But now all of a sudden you're going to need a little bit more help. The pathway to get into the playoff is a little bit muddier now. It'll happen. I think they will get back into the top 13, top 12. But I think winning the ACC is going to be, you know, obviously the clear way in. But can the ACC get a second team in case they're not able to win it? That's a tougher conversation. It's just not really been a year where everyone, you know, they're all kind of beating up on each other. And that's tough. The conference doesn't get the same breaks that some of the others do. But I do think they're going to have a pretty good chance to get in. Can they take care of business here in the next couple of weeks if they can reach the championship game? I think even if they, I don't want to say if they lose that they're in, but I think the SEC is cannibalizing itself a little bit. Big Ten's about to cannibalize it a little bit, itself a little bit. So, and it helps that there's not a lot of G5 contenders. It's basically going to be one representative from there. So they have a pretty decent shot, considering how poorly, you know, some of these games have played out over the last, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks.
All right. A&M, did that scare you off a little bit, or was that a blip on the radar?
No, I don't think it's a blip on the radar. And it's just hard. Like, it's hard not to count their history against them. They do feel like a ticking time bomb. Marcel Reed is awesome. He is so fun to watch. He's so explosive. I think if you're Ohio State, I think that's the team that you're going to worry about the most because they have the athleticism. And same for Georgia. Texas A&M is one of the few teams that has the elite athleticism all over the field. They've got the playmaking. They've got the big names that they brought in through the portal, at least former big recruits. And I think they have a really good coaching staff, too. What they've been able to do on a weekly basis is it's just a lot different than what we saw under past head coaches that they've had. And so the talent's there. The question is, do you have the quarterback who can consistently do it, or is he too much of an X factor? Is he going to turn the ball over several times We saw it last week where he should have had a couple more turnovers. Like, there were opportunities for Texas A&M to be buried even more than what they were. Incredible comeback. It's a great bout of resiliency. Obviously, you're happier that they won than if they would have lost. But at the same time, I think that was a real reality check for them to say they are possibly a team that could win out the regular season. And in the first round of the playoff, they drop a dud and they're upset by a team that they probably should have beat by two scores. It's just they seem to be one of those programs that can't really focus in on some of these games. And, you know, whether it's a big game or a team that you're favored by, they just feel especially prone to dropping one of those games.
Did James Franklin settle by taking the Tech job?
I don't think he did. I don't know where else was too much more attractive. I don't think LSU would have been interested. I know there's a decent amount of openings right now. But I think the book on Franklin, great guy, good recruiter. He's definitely a floor raiser. I don't think he's necessarily a ceiling raiser. And a lot of these jobs are looking for that ceiling raiser. I think Tech is a pretty patient place. They're going to give him time. They're going to let him build. If he can settle in there as an eight, if he can basically make what Virginia Tech was, Penn State was at Virginia Tech, he'll have a lifetime job there. Should he have waited maybe a year? I could see that argument. Maybe he gets a little bit better of a job next year. But at the same time, I think he likes the challenge of building more than he likes the challenge of maybe, I don't want to say competing for a championship, but I think that he did so well at Penn State at building them from the ground up. I think he probably wants to get back to that and maybe lower pressure right away, and then over the next couple of years, see where he can bring that program. So I like the fit. It seems like a downgrade for him, maybe than what we would think, but ultimately, I don't know that the opinion of him was, you know, incredibly high. It's not like he would have walked into, you know, it's like Sark left Texas. I don't think Franklin would have been a candidate there. So I don't really know what else he would have waited for.
Talking all things college ball with our buddy Ian Valentino. Make sure you check him out at A to Z Sports. I can't think of a reason other than hubris why Lane Kiffin is getting involved in all this media scuffle about his future at Ole Miss and potentially leaving for other jobs. But why is he setting himself up to have egg on his face if he does leave? Like, what is the point, again, other than stroking your own ego, to make this much of a fuss about it? Just do what you're going to do.
Yeah, I've been a little bit surprised. I don't know if he's trying to troll other fan bases. I don't think that he is, though. I think he's maybe conflicted, and it seems hard to imagine. I don't really understand why. He's built a really good situation for himself, unless if he knows something that we don't, which is possible, which to me, the big swing would be, you know, can he go back to the NFL or something like that? I don't think that door is ever going to be open, but I don't see it. I don't see the pitch for Florida. I don't see the appeal of Florida. LSU does not seem to be a match there. I think from a program situation, that could be a sell, but I don't think LSU is interested, and I don't think they've put themselves in the position to really sell themselves to him. So I don't know what he's getting at. If it's for a bigger check, well, he's kind of backed himself into a corner with that too, because he said that it's not about the money. So I know how these guys double speak all the time, but you know, he's a guy that I generally take at face value more than most other coaches. He just tends to say what he thinks and seems to follow through on it. So there must be some smoke to that fire. Either he is actually interested in Florida and he's just kind of, you know, playing it out until the string's played out and sees where Ole Miss kind of, you know, settles when the season ends, or he's just playing a long game and wants to mess with Florida a little bit more than what, you know, I would care to. I think it damages the team. We saw it. The team came out sluggish. They came out like they didn't really have their eyes on the prize last week. And I think that's, you know, we saw it several years ago too, when the same rumors were going around. Ole Miss comes out and they laid some duds in the second half of the year. It's very damaging for these kids when they don't know their future. So I think he needs to, you know, just like you said, whatever your intention is, just make it known and commit to it.
All right. So a couple of guys that are out there, like a guy like Jeff Brohm, for instance, are you surprised he's probably, you know, going to take this contract at Louisville and stay there? And because there's guys like that are scattered across the league right now, because in my opinion, Ian, there's no like one guy that sticks out like a sore thumb, especially now that Franklin has signed on with Virginia Tech, that it seems like a logical fit for a lot of these openings. It seems like a lot of the guys that are out there, the job might be too big for them.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of swings. I mean, you're talking about Brian Hartline, offensive coordinator from Ohio State, possibly getting some of these elite jobs or these top-notch jobs, which I'm not saying he's not qualified to get something, but it seems like a big jump. And we talk about, you know, same thing like the James Madison coach, talk about, you know, being linked to UCLA. Like, I don't really know why I'd go to UCLA. I don't see a dramatically better candidate than him. Maybe he could get Penn State. Did you fire James Franklin? Did you fire Brian Kelly at the right time? I think you could argue, sure, maybe from where your program sits today, but where's the candidate? Where's the great guy that you can go out and bring in? And you know, there's not like a Marcus Freeman that's just waiting out there that seems like a top-notch promotion candidate or someone that's built something somewhere else and has done it for years or brings a lot of spark to a program. It almost feels like you're getting ready to see some huge jumps in competition, and some of those guys will be the right hire. We'll look back and be like, wow, I can't believe we questioned that. But that uncertainty it's surprising to see the numbers that these schools paid for buyouts without a clear plan in mind. It's not like, you know, Lincoln Riley, I think, is a target potentially from USC. I could see LSU going after him. I think that could make some sense. But it's not like his stock is at an all-time high and that it's easy to just justify to your coaching staff. So it's a fascinating time. I think some of these teams may be regretting their decision here in a couple of months when they're looking at this job market and they're like, man, we might have to take some NFL guys or maybe some former college guys that went to the NFL to be coordinators and maybe settle a little bit more than what we thought, because it's just the coaching pipeline is just not one of those years that's super deep with guys with Power 4 and SEC and Big Ten experience.
Before I let you go, what do you make of the committee switching all these names and faces and chairs? Is that healthy for the college football playoff committee?
I think I'll say yes. I'll say yes in the sense of we know how things run. We know kind of the status quo. Maybe it is. Maybe this will be for the better. The game has changed so much that I think maybe having guys on there, men and women on there, that maybe have a fresher look, maybe some fresher ideas. Maybe this is the way that we need to lean into things. As we enter this, you know, we've been in NIL, but we've kind of seen what NIL can do if it's unchecked and all the money that's going around with the TV contracts. So maybe these are the folks that need to be in place to kind of get it back to being less of a business, or at least feeling like less of a business direction. It's going to be more of a business, but maybe feeling less so on Saturdays than maybe what it's starting to trend to. I know a lot of fans are getting turned off by that. So I'm hoping that they can bridge the gap a little bit better and at least make it feel a little bit more traditional from what we're used to.
Ian, great stuff as always. We'll chat soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Ian Valentino of A to Z Sports talking all things college ball. Yeah, it's interesting. You got Utah guy coming in. You got this guy going out. I mean, it's a lot of moving parts for a committee that kind of has a lot of stuff to work through and is important. But we'll see how it evolves through the rest of the year, like Ian said. All right, back to y'all. This quarterback situation, what are we doing? Put your GM hat on. Does Michael Penix Jr. automatically get the keys back when he's healthy? Or do the Falcons seriously need to consider bringing in another option? They're going to need to bring in a option, but I mean like an option, a guy that could be the guy to compete with Penix, at least for now, because he's not going to be healthy again for a while. And he has 5 season-ending injuries to deal with now. At the age of 26, is he a guy that you can count on? What should the Falcons consider doing? We got a long way to go, but I'm taking the temperature. The initial thoughts after it came down today that he's out for the year. 404-726-0929. Your calls are next. Chris Thomas tonight.